Hello, everyone. Welcome to Lead First, Lead Second, the podcast where our spiritual pursuit meets our leadership development. We believe the best leaders don't start with strategy, they start with surrender. When you're led by Christ first, you lead others with greater clarity, purpose, and impact. Every episode is designed to help you grow, not just in your leadership skills, but in your character, your convictions, and your calling. In today's episode, we get to connect with a good friend of mine, Pastor Ryan Rodman. He and I have been able to serve together for the better part of 17 years, and it's just amazing how God continues to use him in big ways, but honestly, through small means. He's just got some great, simple outlooks on what it means to run after Jesus, how our leadership can have this incredible impact, even in ways that we'll never fully see. And I hope that as you hear the ways in which he runs after Christ and the ways in which God has used people in his life, that we begin to see our stories intersecting with what God wants to do more and more. You're not going to want to miss it. Let's dive in. Ryan, man, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, man, great. Excited to be with you. This is fun. Man,
for sure. Ryan and I have worked together for a long time. I've been at Grace for 17 years, so it, I mean, about that long then.
Yeah.
And you were here just before that, right?
Yep, as a pastor, right?
Yeah, right.
On that role.
Yeah, it's so fun. Ryan's the campus pastor over at our Akron East campus here at Grace, and that's probably the only thing that I don't love is now we don't see each other daily. But other than that, like, God's doing some really, really cool stuff. So why don't you give our listeners, because not everybody would know who you are, of course, just a little, like, kind of mini bio. You know, how did you get into ministry? Like, what ways have you served, and what are you doing now?
Yeah, so big picture, grew up in this area, mm-hmm. right? So I'm an Akron guy and grew up with really no church background. Mm. And so... my grandmother grew up in the Catholic Church, left the Catholic Church. My mom had no church background. So my parents, both of them, had no religious background. And so then I was kind of one generation removed from any bearings at all.
Wow.
And had some friends who followed Christ in high school. And so they shared Christ with me over a few different friends shared Christ with me over the period of a few years. When I first heard the message of the gospel, totally rejected it. Actually, Tony Lavigne was one of my friends in high school. We've been friends for a long time, and he shared Christ with me, and I rejected it. But the seeds of the gospel were planted, you know, and about 2 years later, I said yes to Christ. Wow. And my journey, you know, as a young man, as a teen, and then into it, my kind of young adult years, were just one of desperately trying to search and find answers for who am I? What do I want to give myself to? I need purpose. Like, why should I get out of bed kind of thing?
Yeah.
Not in depression, but I'm a guy that's like built for purpose.
Sure.
And I needed a reason to drive me. And I was out of reasons. I'm like, none of the stuff that everybody told me was worth living for was worth living for. So long story short, some shame, some guilt, and some need for purpose really is what drove me to the gospel. And in college, I said yes to Christ. It was one-on-one, like one guy to another, sharing the gospel on a road trip. And my good friend Joe Goble shared Christ with me, and I was ready, you know? And so I said yes to Jesus, and about, I would say almost immediately, my life started to change in some ways I didn't expect. And it would take me about 3 months before I would start to attend like a Bible study. Mm-hmm. I went to a Bible study before I went to a church. And as I started to hear the Word of God taught, it just absolutely shredded my life in the best way possible.
That's
awesome. it was like light shining in the darkness, you know? And I'm like, okay, now I see. I see what needs to happen.
Yeah.
And so these big changes started to happen. And things like, you know, kind of the externals of life, like my language and where I spent my time and how I thought about people. And pretty quickly, like within a year, the Lord called me to ministry.
Hmm.
And that was not on the radar. That is not what I was thinking I was going to do. And so I said yes to that call. I got real sick, got mono, had to drop out of school. And then during that sickness, God totally had my attention.
Mm.
And I was like sleeping 12 to 15 hours a day. I'd get up, read my Bible, get super excited, get tired, sleep, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then I met with Jeff and described what was happening to me. And I'm like, Jeff, what is going on? I'm like obsessed with the Bible. I'm obviously sick, but this is like changing what I'm thinking about how to spend my life. I was in business, headed towards a business career, and I was like, I don't know if I can give myself to anything other than getting this message out and making Jesus make sense. We wouldn't use that language at that point, but that was the idea.
That's awesome.
And so I said yes to ministry. Fast forward another year, Lori and I got married. And then during that time, I got pulled onto a staff as a kind of a part-time intern. I was Jeff's secretary, basically. I was awful at it. But I was still finishing my Bibles. I switched schools, finished Bible college doing that. And then we rolled into a few different roles in ministry. Our first ministry role was kind of helping start this effort of leadership development for young adults. We called it the 412 Commission.
Yeah.
And, man, that was powerful. That was the first thing. It was kind of this entrepreneurial venture that Laura and I jumped in together and kind of created it from scratch with Jeff. Mm. And Jeff's been my boss for, like, 25 years or whatever. It's kind of fun. We did that for 2 years. We're kind of led these small groups of adults in this super intense training environment, and then came on staff here in 07.
Okay.
Right? And so we had, we've got four kids now, and that was an answer to prayer. We had some struggles with infertility, but eventually we were able to get pregnant. That was kind of a miraculous thing that happened. So a son and three daughters, we had four kids in 5 years, which was super intense.
Yeah.
So Lori and I just hit 23 years of marriage. Our kids are between 18 and 12. So that's kind of where we are today. And then in that run, I became a campus pastor at the Akron East campus now, which was, again, not part of the plan, but part of God's plan. So it has been an incredible journey. I mean, when we think about how God has worked, like when I look back at my life outside of me, just how he's worked, it's been incredible to see how God has just intervened in my path and said, hey, I think you need to go this way. So watching him work through, it's been awesome.
Yeah. There's a few things that you said there that I think would be incredibly helpful for our listeners to really grab a hold of. One was Tony sharing Christ with you. And you said, you know, it wasn't until 2 years later. And I just think of, like, how many times we do something, say something, try to reach out to a loved one, and it seems like nothing clicked.
Totally.
You know, like, speak to that a little bit. Like, why is it important to still invest yourself into someone, maybe even though they're not responding right away?
Oh, man, it's a story I love to tell, because I wasn't just non-responsive to it. I was antagonizing. I was mocking. I was on the other end of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, Tony, you're an idiot, man.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
well, he kind of is. No, I'm just...
yeah. Right? I'm like, what are you even talking about? And I kind of blew him off. It wasn't just like flat, neutral. Yeah. It was against. Mm-hmm. And so he would have walked, right, from Tony's perspective, he would have walked away from that thinking, probably feeling like that was a failure if he had the wrong expectations.
Sure.
I ran into him again right before I said yes to Christ, probably about, I don't know, maybe 4 to 6 months. I can't remember the exact timeline. And it was him and another buddy, and I walked in with six people. Mm. So, like, there's six of us, and Tony had just come off this major ministry thing, and I asked him how his summer went, and he launches into all this God stuff, right? And I'm like, I remember walking away from that experience, him risking sharing his story, sharing his faith in front of all my friends who I knew, most of them, some of them knew Christ, but most of them didn't, knowing he was willing to be bold and risk his reputation and look like a, quote, idiot in front of all these people. And it messed with me. His boldness and willingness to be rejected messed with me.
Yeah.
And I thought, he still believes this, first of all, and he believes it enough. It's like growing stronger that he would be willing to be persecuted for it. And it really affected me in a deep way. And I believe all of that was part of me coming to Jesus. Mm-hmm. It was kind of bouncing around in the background of my heart and mind. So when my friend Joe, was like, hey, man, have you ever thought about becoming a follower of Christ? I think I was way more primed than I realize mm-hmm. by those experiences, even though in the moment, from Tony's perspective, he's like, I got destroyed. You know, I had no, quote, success yeah. with sharing the gospel. But it's just how it works, yep. right? You're planting seeds.
That's right.
And then you just wait.
Yeah.
Water, wait, pray, hope.
And someone else maybe or likely is going to get the harvest.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
It's really, really good. Now, you mentioned Joe again, and he was another aspect of what I wanted to dial back in on, because I think there's another wave of people that think, like, the effort that I've put into what Jesus is asking me to do hasn't amounted to much.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe they've had a story where they were able to have a great conversation with a friend in college. You know, maybe they've served here or volunteered here, but when they look back or even when they look ahead, they just don't have a lot of confidence that what they do has a lot of purpose or a lot of hope. But there's such a ripple effect to what God has asked us to do and the role that we get to play. Because even in the most humble of ways, Ryan, like, you get to shepherd now a few hundred people,
yeah.
and I'm purposely letting you be a little humble on that, but, like, you've been able to impact one way or the other a lot of folks. And Joe's a huge part of that.
Yeah, he sure is.
Because if Joe was like, I'm back to the Tony thing, I'm too ashamed to share, to ask the question, I'm not sure, who am I to ask these things, like, who knows what Ryan's life would have looked like. And yet, when we look at whatever you want to say is part of the Ryan Rodman trajectory, legacy, what, you know, those weird words when you're sure. still in the middle of it. Right. But, like, Joe's a big part of that. And so how would you encourage people that feel like what they have to offer is not much?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's I try to connect this dot a bunch for people. Mm. Like, I'll say this a lot. And, like, when you are sharing Christ with somebody who feels far from Jesus, you need to think about me. Mm. You need to recognize that person could be a me or somebody else. Doesn't matter. Right, I'm the person with skin on that they can get their head around, their imagination around. You just don't know.
Yeah.
And I was not a candidate. You would not look at me and think, that guy's deaf. Like, I was arrogant. Mm. I was like into intellectual stuff. I was into arguing. I was not fun. You know what I mean? I was not like, this is a loving guy that would definitely consider following Jesus. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. But I did have a sensitive conscience, and I did struggle deeply with being intellectually honest. I'm like, if you can show me it, and I can see the reality of what you're saying, I won't deny it, you know? But I think we vastly underestimate the power of planting seeds.
Yeah.
And it's like rejection, a lot of times we don't share Christ because of fear of rejection, but it's rejection is normal.
Right.
It's the expected. Mm-hmm. There's tons of scripture just about, here's what you should do when you're rejected.
Right.
Yep. Because we should kind of expect that.
Yep.
Jesus is going to say, hey, get up and jump for joy when you're persecuted. You know, like, you can rejoice. You have great treasure in heaven for that. But I just, the potential of what can happen is incredible. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage anybody, and it kind of fires me up to remember that, you know, to see that story play out almost as if it's not mine. I feel like I had very little to do with my story.
Sure. Yeah.
Truly.
Well, yeah. I mean, you had nothing to do with whether or not Joe was going to respond, nothing to do with whether or not Tony was going to share the first time or the second time. And yet, God in his mercy and his providence is like, all right, Ryan, I'm going to get your attention.
Yeah, and to know today, like, now I'm really, really glad those guys took the risk.
Yeah.
Like, you loved me enough to look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And you loved me enough to face rejection mm-hmm. because you cared about my soul. Mm-hmm. And you're like, it's worth it.
Sure.
It's worth it to go there.
So, Ryan, you've had at least a couple of kind of like major transitions, even within ministry, of mm-hmm. I'm serving in this capacity, and now God's calling me to take a right-hand turn. My guess is there's a huge chunk of our listeners that have been in a role or a responsibility, some version of ministry leadership, where maybe they're feeling some type of nudge, like, I should step into something different. I should begin exploring something else. I should work with this person to build something else. but they're holding back because, well, but what I'm doing now is worth it.
Yeah.
Can you speak to how to respond or how to even know? Because I think the two transitions I'm thinking of are like when you went from 412 to more pastoral ministry, and then when you went from being one of the honestly, you were one of the lead pastors here at our Bath campus, and then the Lord was like, and now I want you to go lead now what is the Akron East campus. Both of those things had a lot of fruit and a lot of great work happening, yeah. And yet God's like, now do something else.
Yeah.
So how would you help someone process those potential changes?
Yeah, I think it's a great question because they're really tricky, right? I think it's a tricky thing to navigate because on one hand, everybody wants to quit sometimes.
Yeah, sure, yes.
Like, I think if you lead in any capacity, yeah. You just have to know, I'm going to want to quit sometimes.
About once a year, I want to go landscape for the rest of my yeah. life. I mean, it's just like I'm done.
Yeah. It's usually something that has to do with, like, I can watch this thing be finished, uh-huh. right?
Yeah.
I'm going to lay tile. I'm going to, right? But it's
so true.
It is, yeah. And there are things that you probably wouldn't do with your life ever, but the desire to get out mm-hmm. is something I want to pay attention to. Am I just tired and fatigued and need a break? Or is there a holy discontent that is right? Right, it's holy that I want to start to pay attention to. That maybe I'm not in the right fit for this season. Mm. Maybe I'm not in the right fit for my wiring. Right, and maybe God just wants to grow me a lot. Mm-hmm. Right, I think there's a huge piece of like this whole leadership conversation is, you know, if I'm thriving, the people around me are going to benefit, mm-hmm. right? It's a big deal. And a lot of times that thriving comes from being stretched,
yeah.
from change and from growth. So I'll just give you some examples. Like in this most recent one, you know, going to Akron East, I read a book, this is helpful maybe, called Necessary Endings, Henry Cloud. Really good, really helpful. I think if anybody's out there maybe considering a big change or even a small one, it's probably worth looking at that to figure out, is this a necessary ending or not? Or is this just a moment or a period of fatigue, right? Because I think that's a big, big deal. You know, what happens to me is, what's happened multiple times is there's a holy burden that starts to form, and it feels like it just takes a while to like come all the way to the surface. When I look back, I can see it forming on my way into it. Like, as I'm thinking about the decision, it feels super cloudy. Every time it feels cloudy. Should I stay? Should I go? Where is God leading? Mm-hmm. And Bob Martinez taught me this. Like, and I would sometimes get stressed about the answer. You know, it feels almost like, man, it's like a big deal. What should I do? And it really matters what I do. And he has taught me over the years from multiple times of failing to do this well. Like, Ryan, the key is just to seek the Lord. Mm-hmm. Like, when you just fixate your attention on the Lord, what happens is the heat and the volume behind that decision drops. Mm-hmm. And you start to realize this is far less important than just being close to Jesus mm-hmm. and doing what he asks. And this last one, I'll give you an example. It was a serious season of pruning for me. Mm. And the Lord really broke me down in the process of seeking him to find clarity mm-hmm. to where I was like, Lord, I'll do whatever you want to do. There's nothing I need in this move. I'll stay if you want me to stay. I'll go if you want me to go. I'll leave ministry if you want me to leave ministry. I don't, quote, need anything from ministry. I don't need to be a pastor. I don't need to be at Grace Church. I don't need it. I want to obey you.
Yeah.
I want to do what you want me to do. But I'm like, there's a lot burned throughout of me. Mm. You know what I mean? Like my identity connected to a role mm-hmm. or to a potential outcome, all of that feels like it just got pruned and fried out of me in the trial of working through decisions. And so I think sometimes these transitions can be super fruitful
yeah.
because we get pruned down to kind of the bare, it's ugly because you get, you know, a lot gets cut away, but then what comes from it is a beautiful thing. It can
yeah.
be.
Yeah, it's a... You leaning into that metaphor is probably one of the reasons why God uses that metaphor. Like, yeah, I love how you even said, like, you prune it down, it might be ugly, but a gardener that knows what he's doing prunes something down, looks kind of gross, but because the next season, now it looks like it's flourishing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the work that we're trying to let God do in our lives, and that we often fight against sometimes because pruning hurts or pruning sucks, or we don't trust that first image of, wait a minute, but if it looks this ugly,
yep,
then what could it ever possibly be? I love how you also said it's about following Jesus and not necessarily the outcome. I think too many times, like if we were going on a road trip with God, we're like, well, which route are we taking? Which highways? Where are we going to land? Like, where are you taking me? Yep. Like, how's this going to work out? And he's like, I just want you to get in the car with me.
Yep.
Can we go on a road trip together? And like, whoa. And it's like, no. The whole point is that you and I spend time, and then I take you where I know it's going to be best for us to be. And it's a trust thing. It doesn't feel like it in the moment, because, again, back to your situations before these things happened, you would have felt like, yeah, I trust you. I'm with you all the time. I'm doing stuff with you all the time. It's like, but do you trust me to shift gears?
Yeah, I trust you a lot when I'm in, like, in control of the situation. Yeah.
When my hand's on the wheel, too.
Yeah, and I think that's right. It's a challenge. If you have a tendency to lead others, mm-hmm. you're going to struggle with this. I mean, I have struggled with this enormously.
Yeah. I think if people are being honest, probably most folks have.
Enormously.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just personally, it's been an area of enormous growth mm-hmm. And challenge for me.
It probably, do you feel like every time that you've kind of had one of those seasons that on the other side of it that you like trust God all the more?
Like today, mm-hmm. And this is where I think a couple things that it does. It helps me not draw superficial or too quick of conclusions about other people.
Wow, yeah.
Because like you don't know how the thing's going to run. You know what I mean? But every time I look back at when God has asked me to do something scary or what felt crazy or was very painful, like today I would look at you and say, I can't imagine not being where I am right now. Mm-hmm. Like the fruit in the passion and like what God is doing, it's very clear to me that I am where God wants me to be today.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade that. On the way into it, I mean, I had a whole bunch of moments where I was like, what have I done?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
What have I just done with my life? And I think that's how it looks when the thing just got pruned. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, it was kind of pretty before. Now it looks real bad.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and it's the trust can't be completely related to the outcome turned into some version of what you're excited about.
Yeah.
Because my mind goes to blanking on where, but the passage says, isn't it up to the Lord to have some of his clay be purposed for normal everyday use and some set aside for like very special and upfront public use? And it, I think that's a tendency that some of us, maybe even as leaders, have. We're like, right, because if I follow God, I'm going to be a special one.
Right.
Well, what if he's calling you to a hard soil where you get to lead 10 people?
Yep.
Like, what is your trust level with the Lord?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's part of the irony of it is, like, in the I don't need it anymore, mm-hmm. I have often felt like most of what, if not all of what's happened, has been in spite of me. Mm. Like, the I don't need it anymore is almost like I don't even really want this, although I'm finding an enormous amount of joy in it.
Sure.
I didn't pick it. It wasn't my plan, mm-hmm. right? And God, there's a in spite of me mm-hmm. experience that I look and say, wow, I'm not even sure. I don't know why I get to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My slight pause. I'm like, yeah, I resonate with those emotions. Ryan, if our listeners were locking into your story and they're like, Ryan, help me figure this out. I'm leading in these different capacities. Can you just point me in the direction of like, how can I become a better leader? Like, what are some of the things that are often a super conviction of yours or a passion of yours? Like, I want to pass this along to as many leaders as I possibly can.
Oh, man, it's a loaded question, right? I don't know, man. There's a ton to say. I mean, first and most, of course, I have landed hard in the words of Jesus in John 15, like living life with Jesus, remaining in him, it's beyond the superficial, like, of course that's the answer, right? I think I've gone full circle around it. Like, mm-hmm. I've gone into a complex things that I think are like awesome leadership principles, and there's some of those that are amazing. And I think full circle, you know, 20 years into ministry, now I'm like back at the basics. And I'm hearing the words of Jesus, and I'm saying, if I have to anchor my efforts and set up shop somewhere, why not set up shop on the things that I know will bear fruit?
Wow.
If Jesus said, you will bear much fruit, this isn't just like little returns. You will, and we don't know what that fruit's going to look like, but but he said it, you will bear much fruit. If you remain in me, my words remain in you. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I set up shop around that idea in that reality? Where there's other things that might work, but this will work. Right? You know what I mean? Like, if I care about bearing fruit, I should probably, and this has been a big deal for me, is recognizing, like, Hebrews 11 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. Mm-hmm. So I want my leadership to be by faith.
Yeah.
And if I anchor around living life with Jesus every day, actually trying to live in his words, then that is an action done by faith. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, I can't look at it and say, yeah, I was really smart about some principles and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is just a faith thing, man. I want to land there. So I think underneath anything else that we would talk about, there's a deep, very imperfect, but deep commitment to that. Hmm. Living life with Jesus. When I say that, I very imperfect, but I'm committed. I want to be there. I want to live life with Jesus more and more. And I think out of that comes a whole bunch of principles that really affect everything that we do. And part of what God does in us is he causes us to, I said it earlier a little bit, he causes us to thrive. Mm-hmm. And as we thrive, we're effective. And I think that sets, for me, like, that sets a leadership paradigm that I want to cause the people around me to thrive so that they will be effective.
Yeah.
Rather than, and it's a fine line between helping people to grow and using them, right? Like, I can be causing somebody to stretch and get the very best out of them, like a coach would an athlete, versus extracting from them. And I think it comes down to your mindset around, what do I want in as I'm leading others? What do I want for them? Mm-hmm. And if it's a heartbeat that I'm trying to help you grow first and most, I want what's best for you. That's actually where I'm going to put my energy, and I'm going to, by faith, trust that the Lord is going to use you in powerful and effective ways to do what we all know needs to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Not that we don't give practical advice and blah, 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 blah. But I think that starts to show up that way. And I think about that in my family. I think about that in how we would interact with the staff and lead any kind of any leadership role. Should, I think, be a thriving out. So the same thing I'm trying to do, live life with Jesus every day, is actually what I want you to do. So it's really simple in that way, not easy, and we do it very imperfectly, and it's still the answer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's still the answer. And I think that on a long road of leadership, I believe that bears the most fruit. That big picture paradigm, if we can grow and cultivate and encourage people to live life with Jesus, do what's best for them, even if it means they might leave, even if it means there's not an immediate connection to the outcome of whatever organization or thing I'm leading, in the long run, that actually is the most fruit-bearing thing.
Yeah. I think that metaphor also just has so much to grab a hold of, because if you're the farmer trying to make all of these plants take off, you can have that subtle difference of like, can I just get this thing to give me as much crop as possible?
Yeah.
or can I create an environment where I have the healthiest plants possible that will then, of course, bear plenty of fruit? And it's because it's not about our legacy anyway.
Yeah.
So who cares, really, if I can get 10, 20, 1,000 plus people to do what I want them to do?
Right.
If I can get 10, 15, 18 people to thrive with the Lord,
yep.
That's where like the game changing happens. Plus, that's what the whole point is anyway.
Yeah.
Like, we're not just a production machine that just happens to have the Christian name on top of it. Like, we're actually trying to create a fruit that is then enticing to the unbeliever, that's life-giving to those seeking after help yeah. and guidance from the Lord. Like, it's meant to be this thing that is worth mimicking.
That's right.
And not just something that's like, well, out of principle, you better do this.
Yeah.
You know? So that's really, really good. I would think that there's obvious takeaways there if you're specifically leading in ministry, small group, pastoring, you name it. But boy, if we could take that mindset even into how we interact with our neighbors, what we do with daily work life, because now you're helping them flourish in a way that builds a tighter relationship.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know there's anywhere it doesn't make sense.
Sure. No, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you mentioned like this abiding with Christ that's found in John 15, remaining in him, and you've talked a lot about like pursuing after Jesus, like at the risk of just giving some cliche answers, sure. Like how do you do that? I think people all the time are looking for maybe at worst, like what's a tip, what's a hint,
yeah.
But at best they're like, is there a way that I can dive into this in a richer way? Like, how do you do that?
Practically, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I explain it, like the way it makes sense to me, mm-hmm. is it's I'm trying to live life like Jesus is in the room all the time.
Hmm. That's good.
Okay. That's relatively accurate. I mean, the Bible's basically going to say that Jesus lives within me. Mm-hmm. But for me to make sense of it, like, I'm going to live a little different. If, you know, Joe, like if you and I were living life together, I might live a little different if you were always in the room.
Sure.
And you might live different if I was always mm-hmm. in the room. There's going to be a direct impact on how I'm going to even think about decisions, mm-hmm. What I'm going to choose to spend time on, what I'm going to choose to talk about. Mm-hmm. Because there's a built-in accountability, mm-hmm. right, and recognition. And we know that the Lord, when he sees us, he's not looking to nitpick. Mm-mm. And pick us apart. That's not the heart at all. But it is a reality that, like, that to live in, where I'm in 1 John right now, in a series, God is light in him. There's no darkness at all, right? And mm-hmm. so when I live life, if I can try to live life with Jesus, in the joy that he has in me, that's going to change the way I do basically absolutely. In fact, it's going to change everything that I do. And I'm like, if I could just get like one thing, quote, right, and that's a loaded statement there. if there's effort that I could put that is grace driven, mm-hmm. It's I want to try to live as if Jesus is sitting next to me all the time. And that changes the kind of the tone at which I say things. It changes the kinds of decisions, what I look at, what I think about, mm-hmm. what I do. And like I said, I remember and forget that Jesus is in the room. I'm making things up 300 times a day.
Mm-hmm. Right, sure.
You know what I mean? But yep. Over time, I want to remember that more and more.
Yeah.
When I'm driving in my car, when I'm at home, when I feel like I'm alone, there's no such thing.
Yeah, right.
Right, all those things. When I'm making decisions, when I feel tempted to be harsh in a situation, remembering, like Philippians 4, remember the Lord is near. Mm. Let your gentleness be evident to all. Mm-hmm. Right? The king of the universe is watching this one. Mm-hmm. That's going to show up different.
Yeah.
And I think that one, like for me, that one simple practice of trying to practice the presence of the Lord has been the most game-changing piece for me. Now, there's scripture and prayer and blah, 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 but like keeping it relational mm-hmm. and using a little bit of imagination mm-hmm. To try to capture what's actually real. Because like the Bible describes my body as a vehicle that's carrying God all the time. wherever I go, God is going with me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't live in alignment with reality all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just hard. And I think we should be very honest about what that's really like. Mm-hmm. There's not like a fake version where we have this thing figured out. I'm like, anybody who has it figured out, let's talk, because I don't have this figured out. But these things are helping. They're moving the needle for me.
Yeah.
Because I think if I can do that, if I can live life with Jesus a little bit more often, it'll change every decision that I make. Mm-hmm.
That's such a vivid mindset on how to live out like a relational interaction with God. Because I love how you said, if there was a friend or a family member in the room with you all the time, you would give consideration for them. You would give deference to them.
Yep.
You know, if I want to go to the movies by myself, I'll go watch whatever I want. If I'm going to go to the movie with my daughter, it's going to change things. It doesn't mean I'm going to do whatever she wants, but it's going to change things.
Yep.
Same thing with my wife. If I'm going to have a conversation with you in the room, you know, like suddenly we're talking about wood chopping. No, it's like, there's going to be certain topics that come up because someone else is in the room that I might not otherwise engage. And I think that that's that relational aspect of, if you look at your prayer life as if God is actually in the room with you, what would you say to God? And I've heard plenty of people say the cliche, well, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God about, and while you might not have the full clarity now that you're going to get in heaven one day, well, you're with God now. You could start asking him now, you know, and same thing with the scriptures. Like, it's like, is it just a book that we're studying? Or if God's in the room with you, is it, hey, what do you mean by this? You know, like, yep. Hey, when you interact with this person in this way, like, it's a real interaction and not just an exercise.
Yep.
I love that, Ryan.
Yeah, even in evangelism, like, mm-hmm. if we're hanging out and you're talking to somebody and you don't introduce me to them,
oh, that's so good.
You're like, yeah, it just closes the loop. I think for me, it was really hard for me to make it make sense. Mm-hmm. Right, I talked about my background. I'm like, so how is it a relationship with God? Mm-hmm. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't get why just memorizing this thing and having this 15-minute blah, blah is like, how is this a relate? I couldn't make it connect.
Yeah.
And John 15, in my mind, holds equal kind of weight to like the Great Commission and the Great Commandment.
Yeah.
I call it the Great Connection because I need the connection, the remaining and abiding in Jesus to make all of the rest of it make any sense at all.
Yeah. I love that. Great connection. I'm even typing that one in my notes here. But like, it's so good. It's the point of probably even what the Great Commandment is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not love, like have lovey-dovey feelings for God and have lovey-dovey feelings for other people. It's like actively participate on behalf of this person, in deference to this person, and then in deference to these other people. I hope you just connect a lot of dots for our listeners, because you and I both know people are asking all the time some version of that question. How do I actually have a relationship with God? And I feel like even a version of a light bulb went off for me in this conversation. I mean, it's just really good, Ryan.
Yeah, and I feel like, guys, I feel like I'm relearning it.
Yeah.
Like, I've been saying the same things over and over for quite a few years now, and I'm like, I feel like this one is going to take me the rest of my life.
Yep. Yeah, that's the freshness of that connection with God.
Yeah.
It can be the same principles or the same conversation on some level, and yet God continues to make it deeper and deeper, stronger and stronger, more meaningful and more meaningful. Like, it's really, really good.
It really is. Part of my story is, like, my parent, I had divorce, right, in my story, and it's been interesting to be a dad and watch how much my kids, like rightfully so, I think all kids are this way, like they just want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say that stuff. I just want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, wow, I want that to be my heart, that I just want to be with you, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. This is the last piece. I just get excited about this.
Good, this is awesome.
Is it, what I love is, I hope, if people are listening, this kind of ruins you in some good ways, you know, because the idea that the place that I connect with God is in a church building.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful to connect with God in a church building. And it's extraordinarily limiting if that's really the only place that happens.
Mm-hmm.
right? So if we can blow that whole thing up, mm-hmm. and now I have access to God, Hebrews says, I can come boldly into his throne room mm-hmm. anytime I want, man. I mean, I can be with God truly mm-hmm. in a way that people from the Old Testament would have been like, there's no way that's ever going to be available. Are you kidding me?
Right.
That's
right.
Crazy. Yep. And I'm right. And most of the time I just kind of take it for granted.
Sure.
But man, if I can grab hold of the wonder of it more and more, just awesome.
That's really good, Ryan. Well, as we wrap up our conversation for the day, I want to make sure I leave space for any last thing that's been in your mind that you want to share with anybody. Is there anything there?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is probably the centerpiece of the whole thing. There's a part of me that just loves the vision of, if I can live this way and help a few other people live this way, mm-hmm. and they could help some people live that way, I don't even know if we understand the potential
yeah.
of when you get a bunch of people connected together in the vine, what kind of fruit comes from that. That's just super fun.
That is excellent, man. It's so good to process with you. I am very much praying that this helps a lot of our listeners. This is good. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope that you were super encouraged by Ryan, and maybe some of those light bulbs went on for you. So many people have asked me in the past, what does it mean to be following Christ, connected with Christ, have a relationship with him? And I think Ryan just is always able to kind of boil it down to a few things. And I hope that's helpful for you. That's half of what we're doing on this podcast. What does it mean to be led by Jesus? And I also hope that as you dive into some of the things that he mentioned about leadership, that you start to see the fruit of that, however big or small, in all the arenas around you. So remember, if you lead others well, if you want to do that, you've got to be led well. Stay faithful and following, and your leadership will follow. If you found today's episode helpful, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, share it with someone growing in their own leadership journey. And I can't wait to hang out with you next time. But until then, keep leading, but always follow first.